But now, this loss of the taste of science, now, at least some group of people have more and more inclination to believe in occultism and magical power. Also, not only in Thailand. But now in Thailand, we may be more in confusion because of the background that can be called loose. This is a problem for our society, and I leave all this problem for our discussion. I think at this point we can engage in some discussion. Thank you.
Introduction is not actually answer completely. You can see that the approach in this lecture today covers many relevant factors to the question of the relationship between the mind and the brain, ranging from faith, knowledge, science, high culture, and democracy. I would leave the floor to all of you who would like to ask questions or comments. Is there anyone who would like to say a few words? If not, then I have one question first, if you don't mind. And I promise I'll leave the floor to all of you. I won't summarize what his variable has said because it's very clear and very systematic in itself. I'm interested in the question of the control by faith. You seem to say that in the past, at the village level, the question of social control was workable because of the size of the community, because of the self-sufficiency of the village life. But right now we have an urban society, a globalized urban society, a globalizing urban society. And I believe that the question of control is still important. And I see that by implication from what you have said, there seem to be two mechanisms of control. The first one is the internal mechanism within the sangha. That is the relationship between the learned monk and the self-interest-oriented monk. What should be the control mechanism within the sangha among these two groups of monks? And it seems to me, secondly, there should be some kind of external control mechanism, maybe the state or the Thai society or the media, which would help implement the control within the sangha. So my question is this. I would like you to be more specific on what would be the possible framework wherein these different levels of social control can be implemented to correct the way that the monks have been behaving in a lot of cases recently. For example, maybe something that has to do with the property management, or to illegalize private ownership by the monks, or to set up certain kind of committee which would take care or look after the economic proceedings of some of the temples in urban areas. Would you like to be more specific on that? I think that would be very fruitful for our discussion.
I think the internal control and external control cannot be really separated. They are interrelated. For example, you pointed to the relationship between learned monk and the monk who are oriented to self-interest. The monks who are called self-interest oriented have interests outside of the monastic community. That is when they have influence on the lay people. And it is the lay people who support the monks. And now the late Nick Ma Hong Wang who devote themselves to study and practice cannot control the self-interest oriented monk directly, because they themselves have to depend on the lay people for support. And now, if the lay people support the self-interest oriented monk, and then the monks devoted to study and practice cannot control the self-interest oriented monk, right? It is the relationship not only inside the monastery but in the society as a whole. We cannot separate the relationship between the monk from the relationship between the monk and the lay people.
But it seems that the way of answering this question, put the question to extreme. I feel that it's not always the case that learned monks do not receive support from the lay people.
They receive less support. Less support means less influence. Right? And now it comes to the point that many monks devoted to study and practice have to depend on the self-interest oriented monks for much support. For example, the monastic educational institution sometimes have the influential monk as supporter. It is difficult. But we have to depend on the excellent control. If the state comes in and the state can back the monks devoted to study and practice, like in the past, when there was corruption in the monastery, in the past we have the tradition of the king coming in. For example, in the reign of King Narayan in Ayutthaya period, the monks and monastery gained very rich material support from the lay people. And then the material gains have led to the corruption in the monastery. This means many lay people came into the monastery, be ordained. They were ordained only for living. And the king set up a committee for examination. And the monks had to underwent the state examination on the knowledge of the Dhamma and Vinaya. And those who had no knowledge were disproved. This is an example. But in the present day society, I think I pointed out in my lecture that there should be government for education. This means we can make an improvement in the Sangha Act in order that its education will be more superior. And in this way, the system of administration will be changed. And more influence will be on the side of the monks devoted to study and practice. This is one way, one among many suggestions, I think.
Actually, I have a few follow-up questions, but I will stop here. And maybe I think Veronica wants to ask something. Oh, sorry, Angela.
My question is in relation to both control mechanism and education. Recently I heard it was reported that, I don't know who was in charge of setting it up, but that either the government or the Sangha was supposed to set up a correctional institution for monks that were like sort of like a juvenile home. I don't know exactly what it was. It's like a correctional institution for monks who had kind of gone astray. And to me, this seems more of a curative measure, not really actually solving the problem, but sort of putting a band-aid on the problem. That I was just wondering, what you thought about setting this up, and if you thought it would help in education, and how to set up the education of monks, that could be important.
I think we already have the system or the rule or regulation. The method can be found, but the problem is how to put it into practice. Now, we have the Dhamma Vinaya. Today we talk on the Dhamma and Vinaya. And the Vinaya means the regulation. This means a system. We have a system of correction for monks. But the problem now is that how does it come to be that even in spite of the existence of the rule and regulation, the practice does, there is no practice. The problem is the practice. Do I come to the point?
Does he come to the point? Maybe you would like to elaborate your question a little bit more so that people know where you're coming from.
Just that I saw this is not really getting at the crux of the problem by setting up such an institution as this. It doesn't attack the system of education for the monks, which is quite rigid and doesn't really train for the monks to deal with the sort of problems that are occurring in urban society or modern society. And I guess more specifically, my question was just that rather than that it implementing curative measures like this, like such institution as a correctional institution, what sort of concrete actions can we take to change the system of education for monks that is not replaced, where the textbooks are dated from the brain of Kumamoto's and not really modernized or equipped the monks to deal with the sort of problems that they might encounter in modern society?
In other words, is it really possible to reform the monk's education, not in too long into the future? Because the curative measure is a short-term thing.
This is the urgent problem. And we have to distinguish between government and education. But at the same time, we have to relate them. It's been how can we realize the idea of having government for education. And as to what you call the correction system, and that is on the side of government. I do not think we should emphasize the government for government. When there are monks who are not for us, who are corrupted, who should not stay in the monkhood, I do not think that we should do something to correct them as a monk, but we should disrobe them. And then they should be corrected when they are lay people. This means they get out before being corrected. But For the monk, what we should do is something positive. We try to educate monks in order that we have full monks. Those who can be creative factors in social development. And now, the problem of education is the problem for the Sangha administration on one side, and also the question for the state government on the other. And the question is, how can we bring them together in cooperation? Because the Sangha government itself is under, and we can say to some extent that it is a kind of control, under the control of the Ministry of Education. And now, if we cannot depend on the state government for the improvement of education, we have to depend on the Sangha government. But if we cannot depend on the Sangha government, on whom we can depend? Now, it has become the matter for individual monasteries. This means some monastery, individual monastery, have initiated in education, and then we say, oh, you cannot wait. You do what you can. But the improvement in this way is something that when that is a kind of very long term improvement or development. We have to wait for a very long time. And at the time when we have a competition between the problems and the solutions, we are not sure we can cope with the problem of the Sankhana. But we have to do the best. We have to do our best, even though we are not sure that we can keep up with the situation or not.
I have one question. Suppose that educational reform for the monks is successful, and all the monks now are ready to play a creative role in society. Suppose society or the laity, after hearing the teachings and advice from the monks who are now educated correctly, choose not to listen because it either is too difficult to perform that way, to live life that way, or it involves too much sacrifice or change. And so the society or laity say, I would prefer to continue building society upon belief in the occult and the non and supernatural, and continue that way. The question is, what would be your response? Because I'm not certain all the problems now that we see in Thai society are just because of the improper education of the monks. So I'm assuming that is taken care of, even though it's very difficult. Suppose that is already reformed. How can the monk, the Sangha, respond to this other problem of lay society?
I think people are different. We cannot make them the same. Therefore, there will be those who listen to the monk, and then there will be those who do not listen to him. And what we can hope is the balance. Now, what I am concerned about is the imbalance or the loss of the balance. I do not think we can have a utopia now. We cannot have all lay people listen to the monk, all monks educated. Even to educate all the monks cannot be successful, I think. Absolutely. It is not something to say absolutely. We do not do anything absolutely now. But even to the point of balance, I think we should be satisfied. And then the lay people are to some extent the same as the monks. The monks can be educated, or some monk or a number of monks can be educated. And also a number of laymen can be educated. And this is at first the balance. If we can realize the balance, then beyond the balance, that is what we can be concerned later. Okay?
A general view first, maybe?
I have the impression that the speaker, his venerable, has been too gentle or too kind to point out that it is the lady's fault too. In all these undesirable things that are happening in our society regarding Buddhism and our faith. He has been talking about the education of the monks. Well, because as a Buddhist, I suppose when anything wrong happens, one looks back into one's self where the faults lie. But we as ladies should look back to ourselves too. What lies in us, which is wrong. This is the mistake. The mistake of the whole system of education. If we look around and ask how many of us in this university understand Buddhism enough to live a Buddhist life, a true Buddhist life, you'll find the answer to what is wrong. Thank you.
According to Ajahn Professor Ravi Kavirai, I agree, and I would like to say something in support. Now, what we call the corrupted behavior of the monk. Can be attributed to the wrong belief of the lay people. This means because of the lay people who have misdirected faith and they devote to the reliance on supernatural power. And then, as I have mentioned in the lecture, that had made room open for monks with bad intentions to come to the temple. And in this way, we can say that it is the lay people who make these monks of corrupted behavior to be into Asia. And then it is a kind of vicious cycle. And then when the monk of corrupted behavior becomes influential, and the monks who are devoted to study and practice lose influence, live in more difficulty. And now the lay people are not educated according to the teaching of the Buddha. And then they have to depend more and more on supernatural power. And now we have the vicious circle. And to break up the circle, we can begin at any point. Begin by educating the monk, or by educating the lay people, or we can begin at the state government or the Sangha government, any point. But at best, it is the cooperation. And another way of answering your question, we believe that if people rely on the supernatural power they believe in occultism, it will be a problem of social development. This means the Thai society will not develop as it should be. Therefore, we try to bring back real Buddhism to this society. Okay, if you say that with the belief in occultism or supernatural power, the Thai society will fare well in point. Okay, no task for Buddhism. But do you think that the Thai society will thrive with occultism? If you answer it is okay, the monk will need no service of the monk.
You touched on it briefly before when you mentioned the Sangha Act. I was just concerned that education reform in the country is not a high enough priority, and even though that's the answer that you come back to for solving a lot of problems, could you give any examples of reforms in the Sangha Act that might quicken some of the corrective action or help restore the faith in the Sangha that seems to have been defeated by some of the scandals?
For example, now according to the present act, there is an organization that has something that can be called absolute power over the government of the Sangha or over time. And this organization has on three powers: administrative, judicial, and also the another one of legislative. All three powers knows distribution of power, and even more seriously, this organization consists of about 50 to 80 monks. Most of them very elderly, very old. And under this organization, there is no subdivision or division for operation. This means the this organization, which is called the Mahathera Samapho or the Sangha Supreme Council, is only a kind of meeting. They govern by meeting. They come to meet about once a fortnight or once for 10 days, about 10 days to a fortnight. And then it is the religious affairs department that will submit the matter to the meeting. And then the meeting will take the matter into consideration and make some decision. And then after the meeting, they scatter. That is all. And then it is left for the Department of Religious Affairs to get it into transaction or not. But it is very difficult for this lay people organization or department to perform the duty, because it is the matter for the monks themselves to do, at least in cooperation. And now we do not have any organization to implement, to operate the affairs of the world. Therefore, what we need is a division or another organization that can put something like a decision into action. Or even some organization to gather data or something like that. And then to take things into consideration before it is submitted to the Sangha Supreme Council. It is where the administration can be more effective. But now it is only this one, only one organization that run all affairs of the Sangha. But in reality, do not operate. And another point is the stress on education now. As I mentioned before, it is only government for government. It's a stress on power. If we are to be clear on this point, we have to read the act itself.
It seems that what you're saying is that we did not have any governance of the government in practice.
In practice, almost not.
Okay, that's good news. Martin is next.
With what Ajahn Mark said, when he said that suppose all the monks are educated, but the lay people, if we choose to listen to them. I would like to support this point a little bit, because I'm reminded of the situation we have in the Catholic Church, where the lay people have a feeling that the monks are not connected to the present world and not connected to their problems. Like, they may be very well educated in terms of the Bible, like the monks may be very well educated on the Dhamma Vinaya, but the people, the lay people of an urban society, as Ajahn Sivana said, they may feel like the monks do not know my problem. I don't expect them to give me any advice, and then they will turn away to some other thing. I think we need to see this in the West a lot, where many, many people just leave the church and stop going to the church. And on the other hand, I think as soon as there is a monk who takes up these very worldly issues, like I have a feeling Papayam does, actually people do listen to him and enjoy listening to him and take advice. So my question actually is, like, what I think is that the education of the monks should somehow include or cover the problems of the present urbanized society.
It may be that I speak of education in deep, in a sense different from yours. When a monk is educated, I mean, he not only knows the Dhamma Vinaya, he knows the conditions of the changing world and how to apply the teaching to the problems of the society. They should know both, not only the Dhamma Vinaya, but they know the changing world. And I think it depends on the criterion of the what can be called to be educated, the criterion of being educated. Being educated means the monk should be able to teach the lay people. To teach them means to teach the lay people so that the lay people can live the Dhamma Vinaya. Live means to apply the Dhamma Vinaya to their life and society. And this means to get benefit, to teach them so that they can benefit from the Dhamma Vinaya. And if they cannot benefit from the Dhamma Vinaya, I do not think they can be called educated. The monk can be called educated only when they can benefit from the Dhamma Vinaya. A benefit means they can develop themselves. They can make use of the Dhamma Vinaya for their self development, and then they educate the lay people to also self develop, to benefit from the Dhamma.
We have
in
the audience representatives from the media. I don't know if I saw her packing, so I have to call attention to her. I believe you have a question.
I'm just wondering whether it's possible to have some concrete measures like a way to prevent monks from taking donations as personal property. Can there be rules to prevent monks from doing that? It's like the problem with Dhamma right now is a problem of management more than, in my opinion, but just how can we keep our monks poor?
This is a difficult problem, admit. But if we can say it, but if it is very difficult to be realized, right? If the monks behave according to the Vinaya, then it is okay. But now it is a problem of the live according to the Vinaya. But the monk lives in the present-day world, in the present-day society. we need, I agree with you that we need an effective management, but the administration is now loose, and now we come to the question of the Sangha effort. We cannot make the Sangha Act really effective. And even the contents of the Act itself are not clear. Because it may be that one factor is that those who drafted the Act did not know the real condition of the mountain and how could they produce an effective act. Now, we need people who have knowledge of the monkhood to make amendments to the present act. And this is one way, but we may have to need for a long time, I am not sure. Therefore, it is very difficult. But another one is the relationship between the monks and the lay people. If the lay people become awakened, and then they restore the social control by way of faith, and then it is another way to rectify this problem. The monks who seek for gain, for material gain and money in the improper way will not be respected by people and they cannot stay. Now we have two or three ways. You have to decide which one will be more effective and which one can be effected in more, in shorter time.
My question is going a little notion about the education of assuming that the education of the Sangha is taken care of, the communication between the Sangha members and the members of the public or the laity. There are other special attributes in the world today, for example, the internet. We are using high technology to convey messages. Do you see any possibility of incorporating technology within not combating the traditional method of counseling between members of the Sangha and lay people? In the future, do you think that there is a possibility that technology could be included in communication between Sangha and
the public? Yes, it is a possibility, but not in a short time. Technology is something of which people in general are fond of. They like it, and the monks also like it. You can buy computers used in many monasteries, but they use only for the everyday affairs of the monastery. It is a problem of education also, education in another sense. In order to get benefit from technology, we need education.
Technology in terms of computer administration, but in terms of media, because of things that the public today are very switched into the television, that these are the messages are coming from, really hard to benefit. to exclude the people?
Oh yes, we use to a large extent the service of the media. Now, some are government supported, some are private matters. Then, and now we have problems with the use of the media. We even say, oh, how can we control the use of the media? Because we have one, and then they use the media, and some do not use in proper way. Some even exploit the media as a way to get money. Now it is a problem. Okay. Without the effective system, the corruption can get in any organization, any system. Now we have this problem also. Monks make use very much of the media. Technology has been used to some extent, but we have a problem. How can we be assured that the media will be used for the propagation or the spreading of the Buddhist principle or the right teaching of the Buddha, not to be used as if you turn on the radio and then you listen to the monk speaking? Okay, some monk will speak on the teaching of the Buddha, on the Buddhist principle. But some speak only on the induced people to give out money, to win so and so.
The use of technology is a double-edged sword. Mm-hmm. And we have actually another walking encyclopedia who has been very quiet. Maybe Emperor Pop would like to say something. So do you agree with everything he said? Any additional comments?
I think we're talking about a lot about education of the monks. I would like to emphasize the point of the general the price it has. Obviously, we cannot really run with the world, grasp the world. If you can grasp that price it has, then you are a pillar in itself for the morality of it. And people will come to you for that. But if you were quite if you become a monk, actually, kind of you are selected kind of people that set for that. So, more or less you're free from worldly bonds to some extent, right? And if you say, when you say pray about the Sangha, when you say Supatipanno first, you have to behave well first. You have to behave right first. And that. I think it's probably enough for my education.
Well, it depends on how you define the justice.
How
conclusive?
No, it's conclusive, and I think it's encompassing to all the area, right? Because everything is included in the airport part anyway. I think it's universal, you know.
Yes, in the strict meaning of the term, the Trisikha is inside the person. And education is inside the person. It is the individual matter. But what is our problem is how can we induce these people to follow the basic. We say that the path or the makkha is very important. But now the people do not know the makkha. They are far away. How can we bring these people to begin the makkha, to start walking? This is our problem now. And therefore we have to deal with both points. Yes, we agree that the education of the person himself is the idea. We need it. But now we have to be concerned also with the system, the environment, the surrounding, especially the system of Kalyanamitta. To induce all the individuals to educate themselves. Now we speak of education at the level. Education in the person, individual, in the individual proper, this is the real education. And the education as a social system. And now I think we have to be concerned with both of them.
We have here a student who was ordained recently, and I would like to ask him what would be his perspectives in his experience as a monk. What would he say about this relationship as a foreigner who has been ordained in medieval time, which is education system within the monk?
Well, I'm not very qualified to comment. But I do agree at coming to different seminars and reading different newspapers and talking to people, you hear about, well, this is a problem, whether it be a scandal, this is a problem, come on, reopen, the problem of the behavior of the monks. So what should we do? Well, form a committee, have an organization, make a rule, get some money from these people, get some money from these people. Reform this, reform that. There is no need, it's not reported, like I said. That, these are curative measures. But Buddha Jao, the Buddha gave an education. He didn't give a religion, he gave an education. He gave a set of rules and his common mode. That is the basic of the education. You have that, you are. But as you said, it's not that easy to understand. It's not that easy. You have to start walking the path. And how do you start walking the path? Well, you look at it. If you have to feet, if you have some feet, which is at every moment, it's not when you're sitting and walking, at every moment, knowing your thoughts and watching your thoughts, and watching the process, and watching how they transform. Then the morals or the sin is already there because you're aware of all your moments, all your actions. And if you have your sati, your samadhi, and your morals, the wisdom will come. The three characteristics will come. That's what was taught. It seems that we've been given a set of rules, we've been given a teaching system, but none of us have really wanted to use it. So I think my only comment in my experience is that it's not necessary to reform this or react to this. That is putting yourself back into the subtle plus like that. The key is to release yourself from the subtle, to see things that are not good or bad. Beautiful or delicious or not. It seems not seem opposite. So maybe the education system, if the monks were afraid to actually teach the Dhamma, the sermon, they are afraid that if they actually say that you followers have kiyé, you have desire, people don't want to listen to that. They want to be told that they can buy this, or they can pick up this, or they can go here, or they can pay for it. They don't want to hear that the problem is themselves. So maybe the only thing is monks have to, or nuns, or teachers have to, you know, teach what the Buddha taught. Don't teach what people want to hear.
Would you like to respond to that?
I do not respond directly. But I would like to say that people can make a progress by way of successively. But at first, what I would like to say is that the public, at least, should be able to distinguish between what is and what is not Buddhism. This means in connection with the present condition of the society. Our point is the prevalence of the belief in supernatural powers of our history. At least people should be able to distinguish between the occultism and Buddhism. And now this is a starting point. Buddhism does not teach people to rely on the supernatural power, something outside, power outside of themselves. They have to rely on themselves. They have to rely on their own action for the effect, the result they would like to have. And now this is the beginning. And if people merely know this, they come into the fold of this. And then they can make a progress. What we need now is the release, I think. The problem is that now the people do not know even how to distinguish between this. And they confuse occultism and something like that with Buddhism. This is my response. Not that I didn't respond.
Are you satisfied with this? You need another ordination?
I agree. We're just, I think, putting terminology on desire for power. Occultism is a desire for power. It is a want. That is not what Buddhism, the essence of Buddhism, is. I think that if monks came out and said that, that there is absolutely no power in the material, that is your desire, giving that image out. Or you are giving that, if you're afraid of a certain image, you're afraid of a certain tattoo, then you're giving that image out, and you're losing connection with yourself. And I think that if that was said, if a monk said that my image or what I produced has no power, well then the trait might go down a little bit, I'm not sure.
I guess we need more of just in this society. I saw a hand from Martin. Is it connected with this issue?
It is connected because it's on the subject of myself. Kristen was discussing with a friend who has been a monk for a long time. And I would just like to add to this with I mean, all the truth what is in what Justin said, I think it, the case doesn't rest at that, okay, I recognize the path and I walk it and I don't care about the rest, they can do wrong. Eventually, I recognize the truth and walk the truth. I think that, as the Venerable has pointed out, the mind has a kind of obligation towards solemnity, and you just witness lots of problems there. And so, I tend to say that if there is a need for measures and reform, which is has nothing to do with a personal individual realization of the truth and the path we should walk as a member of the two Buddhists.
Buddhism is a system of what can we call Kalyanamitta. We have two factors, the internal factors and external factors. When we speak of the benefit, we speak of benefit for oneself and benefit for others. These are impact, these come. When we train ourselves, it means also that we will become more able or have more ability to be of benefit to others. This means the benefit of oneself and others are interconnected. The real education, as I mentioned before, is the individual responsibility. It is inside of the person. But it is also the responsibility of everyone to induce other people to educate himself or herself. And therefore, we have the teaching of Kalyanamitta, in which the Buddha himself said, "Oh, I am the Kalyanamitta of all people." And then our society should be the system of Kalyanamitta. We do not take responsibility only for ourselves, but we have also the teaching that in caring for yourself, you care also for others. When you care for others, it is the care for yourself also. How can we take these two consistently? We can coordinate both, because it is the part of one and the same system. We should develop ourselves as individuals so that we will be a good member of the society. And when we develop ourselves in the right way, what benefit ourselves will also benefit the society. And what really benefits the society benefits the individual. I do not think Buddhism is a religion of isolation from society. It is not the religion of the ascetics. It is very different from the religion of the ascetics. Buddhism is not asceticism. When the monks or lay people cannot live isolated from the society. For the monks, for example, the vinaya, the discipline of the monk, prevents the monk from living cut off from the society. they have to meet with the lay people every day. Because the Vinaya is private. The monks depend for material sustenance from the lay people. They have to come to the society. And in this way they will exchange. This is the way of exchange between the Amisthana and the Nathana. The gift of the material requisites on one side and the gift of the Dhamma on the other. Among the monks themselves, the monks cannot live away from the monks' community. At least every fortnight, every monk has to come to the meeting to attend the meeting for the recitation of the Padimokkha. And whenever there is a community activity, the monks or the monks have responsibility to come to participate, to take part in the activity. It is the balance between the individual life and community life. It is not an extreme. One extreme is isolation from society. The other is to be too much involved in the society, what we call it type. Group three or Sankhanikaya. It is a Matthima Pratipada, the middle, the way of balance. Many, many people mistake this, mistake Buddhism as a religion of isolation from society. Now, to counter this, we can say even that, oh, Buddhism is the religion of society. But really, it is only a balance. We should have a balance. The balance can be found also in the way we see Buddhism as a religion of suffering. Some people, oh, the Buddha teaches the Four Noble Truths. The first one is the truth of suffering. And then in some encyclopedias and dictionary we can find, oh, it is written to the effect that Buddhism teaches that life is is full of suffering or something like that. And now, if people cannot have do not have the knowledge to distinguish, they have been hear Buddhism as pessimistic. Oh, I say in the opposite, Buddhism is the religion of happiness. Why? Because in practice only happiness can be experienced. We can distinguish between the two. Suffering or dukkha is something for wisdom to know. It's something for knowledge only. The Buddha teaches the Four Noble Truths. He teaches also the four functions towards the Four Noble Truths. Without proper function, without the right function, it is the wrong practice. What is the function towards suffering? Oh, it is knowledge. And then dukkha or suffering is only something to be known. To be known, not to be experienced. The Buddha does not teach dukkha or suffering for people to experience, no. It is something for them to know. In order to solve the problem, you have to know the problem. You have to be able to delimit the problem, to diagnose it. But in practice, when the Buddhists begin to practice, it is only happiness to be experienced, to be far and far away from suffering. The dukkha is a part of natural condition. And then the natural condition is something we have to know because we cannot change it. But for our life, how can we live a good life and happy life? At least one thing is to know what is the problem. We have to face the problem. But now, suffering is something to be known only, not to be experienced. And when we practice, it is only happiness and the cessation of suffering that we can experience. Therefore, we can say that Buddhism is the religion of happiness, not religion of suffering. This is only to clarify, to rectify a mistake. Okay, we have any more?
Well, just out of curiosity, how do we know something without experiencing it?
No. We experience only because we have not surpassed it, right? As before we come to know it, we have experienced it. But when we know it, we do not have to experience it anymore.
So, different levels. We have a professor from sociology and anthropology at the Angola. I don't know if you would like to say something.
Maybe this has already been discussed, but I just feel that I have a problem of teaching layers to understand the changing society. So how can we expect the monk to understand both ways, to understand the world, the media and the changing society? And I see now there's a great train from the middle of Sangha to come to the university, and perhaps this is their way of seeking the understanding of the changing world. And I wonder if they can be successful and become good monks, or is this the way of their seeking to pursue a different path in their career life?
I do not think that we need all the monks to know to this point. Only some monks. When we have some monks, a sufficient number of them, then they can work. It is not too difficult to distinguish between what is Buddhism and what is occultism. When we know what is the real essence of Buddhism, that is enough. When they know the real principle of Buddhism, it is automatic that they can distinguish it from occultism. The problem now is that the monks do not know even what is Buddhism. What are the principles of Buddhism? And when they know this, even though most of the monks are not able to teach all people, we do not care. Only some monks are needed. And then some laymen who are also educated can teach other lay people. In the Buddhist religion, it is the religion for the four assemblies of people. Monks, nuns, lay male deputy and lay female deputy. All are members of the Buddhist fold. And in the time of the Buddha, not only monks are teachers of the temple. You can see that lay people were placed by the Buddha as foremost among the teachers of. Now, in the Thai society of today, because of the decline of education in the monastery, you can see that many lay people come to a head. Now we have many lay people who can teach Buddhism. Some of them can teach better than many monks. And now, only education to some degree, to some extent that we need, only that. One way to speak about it is to have a balance. Now we have an imbalanced society. We should bring it back to the balance.
Any other question from the floor? I hope it's not too bad if I ask one more question. I don't know if this question is in your mind or someone else here, but I remember that during the recent scandals involving certain monks, famous monks, there was a saying that the reason it's not the monks who are to be blamed, it's the women who flock around the monks. And there's one explanation which came out very clearly that it's because women do not have a religious career. Therefore, they only have supporting roles in the present structure of Thai Buddhism. So they don't have a major role in religion, they cannot be ordained. And therefore, they flock around monks and then we have six scandals. I wonder how would you respond to this?
There are two points. First, the reason why they flock to the monks, I do not think that it is merely because they lack the female organization or the female religious community. It may be because of other factors. This is what we have to analyze more. Secondly, to have the religious community for women is something the Buddhists should try to be open to women. I agree with this point. But what kind of community should be set up? This is a question to be discussed. It may be a matter for another session. But we have to distinguish between what we would like to have and what will be possible or impossible according to the Vinaya. According to the Vinaya, yes, there can be, there used to be the community of nuns in the time of the Buddha, and in many centuries thereafter. But the community of nuns or the Bhikkhuni Sangha became extinct many centuries ago. According to the Vinaya, it is impossible to restore the Bhikkhuni Sangha. Because in order to ordain a Bhikkhuni or a nun, there must be the Bhikkhuni Sangha or the community of nuns. This means a nun has to be ordained by a community of nuns. But now we have only the community of monks. The nun is really ordained by the both communities. But now we do not have the community of nuns to give ordination to women. And the question is, if it is impossible according to the Vidya, can we set up a community in imitation of that or something like that? This is a question for us to discuss. Sometime later, we may have to take this matter seriously. But in principle, I agree that we should find a way for the lay, for the female Buddhist to follow or practice Buddhism to their utmost, to their best.
I would like to say that this is a really rare occasion for all of you to have this much time from this venerable soul. I really encourage any of you who have something in your mind and in your heart that you would like to share with them. Martin, I would like to on behalf of the Thai study session, to thank this wonderful, very greatly for his generous giving of his time to come to be with us, to share his thoughts, and for everyone's very active participation and attention. Martin?
Well, on behalf of the students of the Thai Studies program, I would like to also say thank you very much to His Venerable and to Ajahn Suvanna. I think it has been a privilege to receive a true lecture on the Dhamma. And I would like again to thank the Thai Studies Committee for setting up this program, and again the Thai Founders Bank to support it. And I would like to ask Ajahn Suvanna to give a little token of appreciation to His Venerable.